But I want to say a big thank you for everyone coming out here today. It's great to see a huge crowd out here. And I'm really looking forward to the next couple hours. Kind of as you saw from an agenda perspective, we got lots of content. So I think I'm going to kick things off this morning, kind of doing kind of an end-to-end tour of Azure, which hopefully we'll have for people that have never seen Azure before. In fact, how many people here have never used Azure before? No one. Okay. How many people here have used Azure before? All right. Okay. Well, we got lots then. So we're going to basically walk through Azure. That's good to know. Kind of end-to-end, and I'm going to try to show off the entire platform, because I think even for a lot of people that have used Azure, Azure is very big now. It's growing very fast. There's lots of new services and capabilities. And so I'm going to try to basically do kind of a quick tour end-to-end, showing off tons of different things, including a lot of the new things that we just announced and shipped at our Build conference 2 weeks ago, as well as a bunch of other things over the last year or so that maybe you haven't seen before, and we'll get a chance to play with and hopefully have some fun with. And then the afternoon, I'll do a tips and tricks, which especially for everyone here that are experienced Azure folks, will hopefully have 10 or 12 tips and tricks that I gave this talk yesterday in Amsterdam, and even a lot of the Azure experts found at least 6 or 7 of them things that they never heard of, and hopefully that'll be fun as well. And the whole format here is going to be, we're going to write a lot of code. So I think I have about 25 demos that I'm going to be doing myself over the next couple hours. And so wherever possible, I'm going to try to, instead of being in slides, be actually using the product and actually showing off different things. So go ahead and get started. You know, I think one of the things I'm super excited about is, you know, just the exciting time it is to be a developer right now. When you think about all the different technologies and all the different things for us to take advantage of, it's pretty amazing, whether it's advanced analytics, whether it's containers, whether it's microservices, whether it's serverless computing, whether it's native mobile apps, bio-wearables, and more. There's tons of things here, you know, for us to build really amazing experiences that can change the world. And beyond just the tech, it really is the changing the world element that I think is particularly exciting with a lot of the apps that we're now seeing being built. And it's really the cloud that's powering all of this and really driving it forward. You know, at the same time, you know, one of the things I hear a lot when I talk to developers is all this stuff's great, but it's also kind of overwhelming. And you know, there is also this sort of, how do I keep up to date with all this cutting edge stuff? How do I become an expert on it when it's so new? Now that I'm using the cloud, you know, the expectations for me to deliver even more amazing things for my business, not just to improve the business, but sometimes fundamentally drive new revenue, the pressure's higher. And then obviously there's always the pressure of, how do I build this thing securely? How do I not get hacked? And how do I ultimately build enduring code that's going to last for a long time? And a lot of these things are what's really driving our work around Azure. And you know, one of the things that I talked about at Build, and you'll see hopefully even more throughout the demos today, is we're really trying to, with Azure, provide a cloud platform that really enables you to take advantage of all this cutting-edge innovation, so that you can really be on the bleeding edge in terms of new technology, but do so in a way that really makes it easy and approachable and helps set you up for success, and does so in a way that enables you to be secure and deliver trusted solutions, and fundamentally deliver results faster than ever before, and really move the needle in terms of what your business can accomplish. And that's sort of ultimately what guides how we think about the feature set, how we're building things, and hopefully you'll see that throughout today. And with that, since this is a demo-driven event, what I thought I'd do is actually just exit out of PowerPoint. And let's actually dive into the product and actually show off a little bit of the experience piece before we dive into specific features and highlight some of the things that you can do with it. So there's not that many new Azure people here, so you're probably all familiar. This is the Azure Management Portal, but if you were shy about raising your hand, this is the Azure Management Portal for if you are completely new. And obviously, this enables you to manage all the resources inside Azure. And so I have here kind of a pinned dashboard of popular resources that I'm working on and can manage. I can go ahead and create new things and use the full list of services that are there and I'd be able to kind of easily monitor anything within the product. So there's a lot of Azure experts here. You know, I thought actually one resource that would be fun to show is one that you maybe have not seen before, which is one of the new virtual machine sizes that we just announced, which is our new M series of VMs. So this is a 3.5 terabyte virtual machine of RAM with 120 compute cores of CPU. So just a small little VM there. And one of the things that's cool about this particular VM type, and this is true for all the new VM types that we've announced recently, and I'll talk more about those in a few slides, is they're built on top of the Windows Server 2016-based hypervisor. And so what that means is not only do you get a tremendous amount of compute cores and memory, they're all 0% mostly and 1%, but it still looks cool because there's lots of blinking lights. And you can see here there's 3.5 terabytes of RAM. So this is great for SAP workloads. This is great for very large databases. And because this is this VM family is already deployed on top of the Windows Server 2016 hypervisor, it means that a cool thing about it is I can actually now take advantage of nested virtualization. And so this is a giant 3.5 terabyte VM that belongs or is mine. And then you'll notice I'm running inside here the Hyper-V manager inside the VM. And I can actually now double click instead of single click, and actually drop into a virtual machine running inside this virtual machine inside Azure, which is something that hopefully even the Azure experts here in the audience have never seen because no other cloud providers ever enabled this. And I can even double click and launch a Linux VM inside this VM. And it works in sort of like an inception-like way. I can go infinitely deep. And so if we had time today, we could just spend all day double-clicking inside the Hyper-V of these VMs and just keep going infinitely down. So this is actually running another Hyper-V manager, so I could have a VM inside a VM inside a VM inside a VM. But anyway, it gets you a sense of the coolness that you can do in terms of VM types, in terms of that nested virtualization. And you know, the beauty is it's all just a couple clicks away from a management portal perspective in order to activate this and start taking advantage of it. And you might ask yourself, why is it at all interesting to have a VM inside a VM? One of the things that we'll talk about a little bit later on is around containers. And I'll show off some of the work we're doing with Service Fabric and talk about how you can build containerized applications in an easy way. And one of the cool features that's built in now to Windows Server 2016 is something called Hyper-V containers, where basically you can run things in a containerized way, but use the hypervisor to isolate those containers even more than you would in, say, a traditional Linux or alternative container environment. And so the beauty about this model is I could basically use this not to just run vanilla virtual machines, but I could actually run hundreds or thousands of containerized instances inside my VM, have them be completely isolated from a memory, working set, and security perspective, and then have a container orchestrator run on top of that and manage it all, which ends up being kind of cool. And when we talk about the modernization of applications a little bit later, something that we think anyone moving to a microservice-based architecture is really going to be able to care about and take advantage of. So that was a little bit in terms of the management portal. We're obviously going to go into more details on that later. One of the things that we announced at the Build conference is that we're also, in addition to having a portal-based management console, if we can switch to machine 4, the iPhone now, is also enabling a native mobile app experience. So if you haven't tried this out yet, it works for iOS, works for Android. You can basically launch it, and this gives you access to your resources running inside Azure. And it's a fully native mobile app. It's built in Xamarin. And I can pin favorite resources. So this is my blog. And I can basically see how it's doing and manage it entirely from my phone. This is an old website I have. If I wanted to, I could stop it, restart it, browse it, et cetera. And you're going to basically see more and more capabilities start to be exposed through the mobile app. We already did an update, I think, 2 days ago, including notification support, so we can send alerts as well as any notifications about Azure directly to your phone. And then you'll basically see our Cloud Shell console, which I'll demo in just a second, also be directly integrated as part of this. So you can literally manage everything you want through a browser or through your mobile device anywhere in the world. So we go back to machine one now. Other thing, just in terms of from an experience perspective, so you'll see throughout the day, we have lots of nice GUI capability both in the browser and on a mobile device. The other thing we've invested a lot on the last year in particular, and starting, I think, to get pretty good at, and this is an area we were, I'd say, previously weak on, is around our CLI and command line automation experience. And one of the things that we just went general availability on in February is the new Azure CLI 2.0. Is anyone here using CLI 2.0 yet? Not many. Good. Well, it's not really good, but it's good for the demo. If you haven't used it, it's really easy to start using it. Basically, if you log into the Azure Management Portal, there's a new little icon here. It looks like a shell prompt, because it is a shell prompt. And if you click it, this will now actually launch a new interactive command shell directly in the management browser. So you don't even have to install any tools. You can install the tools and run it in any standard Bash or Windows environment. So it can run, you know, completely in the command prompt in Windows or the Bash shell on a Mac or on Linux. But the cool thing with the Cloud Shell is you don't even have to install the tools or even log in with the tools into Azure. You basically just click this, and now you have a fully interactive command shell that you can use anywhere very quickly directly inside the portal. And what's happening under the covers is we actually just spun up a Linux VM in Azure. We're using containers to basically create an environment here that gives you a full Windows-based experience. So just to prove it's real, you can see all of the different Unix apps running or Linux apps running inside the shell. I could even run Vim. Help, I can't exit. Escape, colon, Q, pound, in case you're wondering. And then, you know, most usefully, you can run AZ, which is our Azure CLI. And so, again, you can run any bash out, so you can download it and run it offline. But the nice thing is it's all integrated directly in here, and you're already authenticated into Azure when you do so. And this basically gives you commands that you can use to manage all your Azure resources. So not just VMs and networks and storage, but you can manage web apps, databases, NoSQL systems, Hadoop clusters, and more. And so, for example, if I wanted to list all my VMs, I could just type in azvm list, hit enter here. And what this is going to go ahead and do is make a REST call to Azure, bring back all my metadata about my VMs. And you can see the native format we use with our Azure Resource Manager is JSON-based, so it's kind of gives you the full list of everything that's set for your VMs. In addition to kind of having a JSON-based view, which is great for automation, we also enable you to output it in different table formats. So, for example, this is a more human-readable format, and you can change the default formatter if you want to be table instead. And so I can now see all the VMs that I've spun up inside Azure. And if I want to, because it's a full Unix-based experience, I could, for example, grep it and say, hey, I only want to find things that are running SQL. And I can pipe the commands directly through any experience to be able to see exactly what I want to do. And if I wanted to, learn more about the commands, click the documentation link. And this basically gives you kind of a nice command reference to all the built-in commands. And we nicely categorize it by the service name. So if I want to know, hey, how do I create a virtual machine in Azure? I can go ahead and click it. And this gives you kind of detailed information about, with examples of, here's how I would go ahead and create a VM. And so, for example, if I wanted to create a new VM called Scottgoo Demo 4, make it an Ubuntu image, locate it somewhere as part of it, I could just go ahead, paste that in, hit execute, should complete in a few seconds. And once I do, I now have a VM being spun up. In this case here, it was in the central US. That'll be able to log in about a minute. And be able to start using. And I can directly SSH from any of my VMs directly inside this shell as well. We do also have Git installed And then a little bit later on, I'm going to show off some of our new database services, including Postgres and MySQL. We actually have both the Postgres and MySQL command line utilities also pre-installed already in the shell. So you can do kind of complete management experience, not just of Azure, but actually of the popular services that we have here as well. So that's a little bit about the command shell. And then, you know, the cool thing is everything I create through the command shell, if I go ahead here and I'll say Scott Goo Demo 4, and do a quick search on that. Oop. If I click the right link, you know, this basically is that virtual machine we just created. It's still spinning up, but basically once it's done, I'll be able to log in directly here or manage it directly here. And again, everything I can do through the GUI is reflected through the API, and everything I do through the API is reflected through the GUI. Last thing I'll just mention in terms of automation, how many people here have discovered the new Azure APIs, the new Fluent APIs for doing management? Cool, only two people. It's not really cool, but it's cool for this talk. So I've shown you how to create things through the portal. I've shown you how you can manage things through a mobile device. We've shown how to do it in the CLI. I should also mention on the CLI, not only are we exposing Bash through the command shell, but you'll see later this summer a full PowerShell experience in that exact same way as well. So you'll be able to do everything I showed there through Bash, also through a Windows prompt using PowerShell. And we're making big improvements around our PowerShell automation. The other thing that we are doing then is if you go to the Azure website, click on documentation, and then go to SDK's tools, and you say get the Azure libraries for .NET. How many people here are using .NET? People are using Java. That's okay, you can keep your hand up. How many people are using Node? Couple, Go, couple, Python, great, Ruby, great, okay, cool. Well, we have SDKs, I think, for all of those. I'll show you maybe the .NET and the Java one real quick. But if you go to that Tools and SDK site, you can click the install. There's instructions on how to install it and use different things. And if you read the getting started, one of the things you'll notice in the new .NET and Java APIs, we're going to have a Python and Node SDK update next month, that'll do it as well, is being able to use these new Fluent APIs to do management. And so if instead of writing a script in PowerShell or doing something manually through UI, if you wanted to just write code to create a VM, this would be an example of what it would look like to do so in .NET to basically create a new virtual machine programmatically. And if you used to do this, this was like 200 lines of code. The nice thing with the new Fluent API is it's much, much simpler. It's also fully strongly typed. And so basically with this Fluent API, you're effectively defining a VM. Every time you hit dot, you get full IntelliSense completion and compile time checking. And so here I'm basically saying I want a Windows VM. I can specify as deep or narrow, shallow as I want in terms of settings. You don't have to set all these. This is just an example of how you can set some of the most popular commands. And again, it's fully strongly typed. And nothing actually happens until you hit the create operation, at which point we batch up all the settings and do a single API call to Azure and execute it, which ends up making it also much, much faster than if you actually set each of these things as an imperative API one after another. And in the same way that you can do this for .NET, if you go back here and say do it for Java, we have a similar one. We walk you through how you can install them with Maven and integrate them into your experience. And this would be, say, the equivalent of how in Java you could create a virtual machine with an SSH key that you supply. And again, you get a nice Fluent-based API with full IntelliSense and strong typing. And again, we'll have updated samples. The SDKs are out, but the docs still need a little bit more work, but you'll see those in the next couple weeks show up for Python and Node, where we'll kind of have similar nice docs with great reference material for all this updated on the site very shortly. So you can create things and manage them however you want, and you know, hopefully, collectively, this gives a good experience. The other thing we do then in Azure again, for people that are new, but also even some people that maybe haven't seen it before. And also going to warn you, this little error message is going to pop up like a billion times throughout the day. In case you're wondering what it is, it's not an Azure error. It is that one of my subscriptions is being shared by someone back in Redmond who, for some reason, checked in a little sample in their own private account that has an error that fires because they can't do a data factory pull. It's not a platform error, it's their coding error. And I debated last night whether going into the subscription and deleting it, but then I felt like that might not be the most appropriate way since I actually have no idea what this thing does. But anyway, if you're wondering why the test mid MVP ul run for the pipeline is not working, I'm not sure why it is either, but it is not an Azure issue, it's just their particular sample. But since they kindly made a sample for me and shared it in the subscription, I felt it would be inappropriate for me to arbitrarily delete stuff inside of theirs. So anyway, I was mentioning monitoring, speaking of monitoring, and so the other thing I just thought I'd make sure I show, because a lot of people, even that are familiar with Azure, don't know this, is you can pin anything to your dash, there it is again, you can pin anything you want inside your dashboard, not just resources, but also you can pin monitoring metrics and tiles as tiles. And one of the things we do have now built in, and I'll talk about more specifically in the tips and tricks talk, is around the Azure Monitor experience that gives you kind of a full monitoring experience across your Azure resources. As part of that, we do support kind of our application insight capability. In this case here, I've got an application map of a bunch of different resources that I'm using to build a solution. So I've got some server-side code, I'm making HTTP calls, I got a database, and I'm calling out to another app. And you know, one of the things that's nice is I can actually visualize the overall health of the system. And if I want to, I could right-click and say, show me everything that's failed for that particular part of the solution. And this basically is gonna bring up the metrics for this particular server-side app. I can see all of the different URLs that have failed, requests that have failed to the system, and then even click into any of the individual failures here, see when it failed, and get back the exact stack trace information. And if I scroll down here, I can even see, when we zoom in, you know, what device hit this app and called this URL. Somewhere in Chicago, it was a PC, and there was the IP address, and you know, be able to debug it and find out information around it. One of the things that's nice now is we do actually integrate directly with Visual Studio and with our Visual Studio team services. So if you want to, you can create a new bug directly from this monitoring blade inside VSTS that'll capture all the stack trace information as well as all the diagnostic information for an engineer to go follow up and fix. And then we also have integrated now the ability where zoom out because I can't see it for a moment. But you can basically go ahead and if you turn it on, have the ability to do what's called snapshot debugging. So when we see an error, we can actually take a snapshot debug of the memory of that process when the error occurred that you can also then open up directly inside Visual Studio and actually debug after the fact without blocking any future requests into the system. And you know, the monitoring stuff, which we'll show again this in more detail this afternoon, we're investing more and more there, and it's getting richer and richer. And our goal is really how out of the box do you have kind of a complete end-to-end experience that'll let you monitor, manage, as well as secure all your resources in a really easy way. Again, all integrated into a common shell and overall experience. Last thing that I'll then show, which is another feature that I think I just zoomed in a little too much. I'll find even a lot of Azure experience users don't know about is the Azure Security Center. How many people here use the Security Center today? Okay, number of hands, but still probably only about 10%. Let's zoom back out. This is built into Azure, and the core prevention support inside it is available for free. So we include it to every Azure customer as something that you can take advantage of and use. And I have about 60 subscriptions here, so it's gonna take us a second to load. And what this basically does is helps you monitor your overall experience and we'll basically tell you anytime we see things that look suspicious in your account, or whether or not we see anything that does not follow what we call best practices that we think you should be doing. So for example, here, if I click on these virtual machines, this is looking at all of the virtual machines inside my subscription and actually telling me where I'm not following what we'd consider at Microsoft security best practices for deploying on Azure. And so over here, you can see I've got virtual machines where I don't have endpoint protection turned on, meaning I don't have an anti-malware agent on the machine. I've got places where I have not patched the system and installed the latest security patches, so I'm out of date from a compliance perspective. You'll see there's a couple of machines where I did patch them, but I forgot to reboot. So maybe either my script failed or a process hung on the machine. And so I think they're patched, but they're not actually fully patched, which means they might still be vulnerable to certain things. And then also cases where I've not turned on disk encryption, which is a feature we have built into Azure now. And so I'm not doing encryption at rest on those virtual machines. The nice thing is we kind of do all these types of checks and recommendations for you built in. We do it not just at the VM level. We also do it at the networking, data, storage, as well as application level as well. And so on the networking level, we can tell you if you've got ports open that really shouldn't be open. Management ports as an example, or SMB as a port. We can also tell you, for example, if you've got a large virtual network, whether we think it's a little too promiscuous, meaning you've got all the VMs on a flat address space, and you don't have isolation, say, between your databases, your middle tier, and your web front end. And we can recommend you should really put in a network security group, which is sort of like a firewall rule to basically isolate those resources or turn them into separate subnets. And all this stuff is basically done with machine learning on top of your deployment and your logs. This one's going to drive me crazy. And the nice thing is all these recommendations are built in and just something that you can take advantage of for free. You don't pay anything for these, so I highly recommend turning them on. I've given this talk now like three times on this trip that I've done this week, and so far I've gotten two emails from people that have said, after watching your talk, I turned it on, and I actually discovered a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't realize that I was not doing. Thank you. And one person did send me mail and said, I actually discovered, because I'll show later on in the afternoon, how it not only does prevention, but can also detect issues. I'd actually detected that someone was actively attacking me on the internet, and I didn't know about it. And it also helped them dramatically protect their system going forward. One of the things that's also coming shortly, it's in private preview today, it'll be in public preview for everyone to use shortly, is something also called just-in-time VM access control. Which is going to be a really cool feature. And what this will basically let you do is turn off all admin access on your environment and across all the machines in your VMs, and we'll actually close all the network ports for any administrative port, so SSH, RDP, et cetera. And then when you want to admin something, you click on this, you request just-in-time access, and you can set up rules so your subscription just automatically grants the person who accesses it, and then you get like an hour by default to be able to manage the VM, and then the system will automatically close the ports again. And if you want to, you can set up more complex workflow rules so that someone in your team has to also approve it before you have admin access. That's a really cool feature that no other cloud provider has today, that basically enables you to ensure you have no standing admins anywhere inside your system, so that if an admin password was compromised or someone guessed your password, they couldn't still get into the system without going through the just-in-time access control approval phase, which is another good defense in depth and something that we do ourselves for the services that we run inside Azure. So anyway, that was sort of quick end-to-end view in terms of the overall Azure experience. How many people saw something that they'd never seen before as part of that? Good, okay. I was worried when everyone said they were an expert here. I was like, oh boy. Tough crowd. So good. I'm glad you learned something new. Hopefully you'll see a lot more demos with lots more new stuff as well. But wanted to make sure that you could see a little bit of the forest of the trees in terms of what we're trying to do from an experience perspective. So in terms of, again, for people that are new to Azure or not as familiar with it, do a couple slides just giving kind of a bit of a more overview context, and then we'll dive back into demos. But the cool thing is all these features that we're providing run all over the world. So we now have 40 Azure regions that are either operational or with four about to go live. And you know, one cool thing is, if you look around the map now, we pretty much have every continent with some regions. You might have missed last week, we opened announced our first two regions in Africa. We're the only cloud provider now that operates in Africa. And so we have two in South Africa, one in Cape Town, one in Johannesburg, that we're really excited about. I think we now have up to 10 regions in Europe, including two, obviously, here in the UK. You know, you can see the dots around the map in terms of where they are. We now have more cloud regions than Amazon and Google combined, as an example, and you'll see us continue to open up new regions over the next year. And what's cool is each of these regions is really big. I would like to joke, you can see these things from space, which is actually kind of true, which is a little weird. But what I thought I'd do is just show a quick video. We don't really show these videos that often publicly, but thought it'd be kind of a fun way that you can get a sense of what each of these regions looks like from just a scale and size capacity. And you'll see some stunning statistics. All of those are for a single region. So one of these blue dots, or one of these white dots. So here's play the video. The cool thing is, you know, not only are these things really big, you can scale up amazing solutions of pretty much any size, but they also have more trust certifications now than any other cloud provider as well. So this is just a small list of some of the different types of certifications, both at the industry level, the government level, as well as the regional level. You know, for example, NHS would be one particularly interesting here. UK Gov is another. And as well as a whole bunch of different financial services certifications as well that are relevant all over the world. And, you know, we're now about 90% of the largest 500 companies in the world are now using Azure and the Microsoft Cloud. So these are just some of the logos of some of those companies. And what I thought I'd do is just play one more quick overview video here about some of them talking about the experience, including two here in the UK. Is anyone here from ASOS? Yay, thank you. And anyone here from BA? Well, yay anyway. Flying back on your airline soon. Thank you. Anyway, we'll play a video of them talking about it.
Microsoft Azure gives us key cloud-based infrastructure that we need. We made a big decision to break down our existing platform, which was one big, large, monolithic lump of software, into a microservice architecture.
This Black Friday, we served 167 million requests in the 24 hours. Average page response times came down by about half a second. That's what you're looking for in a new platform.
Azure provides the glue that brings together the data from our internal on-premise systems and join that with information held in the cloud. We use Azure Application Services and also Azure SQL Database to provide the data resources to the application. To achieve single sign-in, we have federated across from Azure Active Directory to our Oracle Access Management.
And that was fantastic. That was the equivalent of putting a very old car on the moon.
We wanted to make it really easy for our customers to get meaning out of their data. The industrial Internet of Things is different only in the fact that our customers have very stringent requirements about how data moves. We want one place to egress that data that we can lock down. The advantage of it being Azure is IoT Hubs makes it very easy to get that data in, Power BI makes it very easy to visualize that data once it's there.
It allows us to put a data scientist in a box.
Microsoft helped us achieve our digital transformation. It's put us over the top. GEICO's been growing leaps and bounds, and we have not had any issues whatsoever from a capacity perspective because of the on-demand capability and scalability of Azure. We can handle the volume. We're like, bring it on. We want more.
And so, you know, the cool thing about Azure is, you know, we have all this capacity and infrastructure. We have a great experience, had all this trust certifications and security, and we have a bunch of features. And so there's a bunch of infrastructure features, and then moving up the stack, there's a bunch of advanced platform capabilities that you can leverage as well. What we're going to do is the rest of the talk is drill into a bunch of those different areas and show off some of the cool capabilities that are relatively new that you can take advantage of as part of it. So obviously one of the things we hear from a lot of people is, hey, I want to be able to quickly run infrastructure in the cloud. And you know, within Azure, you can obviously spin up virtual machines. You can take advantage of storage. You can take advantage of networking to do that. And you know, one of the things I think is kind of cool that we've come out with, in particular the last year, is some real nice enhancements at the infrastructure level that enable you to do even more than just spin up a generic virtual machine, but really spin up a virtual machine that's precisely suited for the particular task at hand and really enable you to do some differentiated capabilities. And one of the things we have inside Azure, like other cloud providers, is the notion of VM families. So we give these things letters, and these basically indicate different types of capabilities that you can use and leverage. And you'll notice there's a whole bunch of new VM families that we've shipped over the last 6 to 9 months, really. That you can take advantage of, ranging from compute-intensive series with our F-series, which gives you the best computation and also best CPU performance relative to price of any cloud provider anywhere in the world today. Our new NVIDIA GPUs, where we have both a compute-optimized as well as visualization-optimized instance that you can take advantage of. So if you want to do, for example, Autodesk just shipped support for their CAD products. They can use the visualization SKUs, and then a lot of people that are looking to do deep learning and more computational work, they can take advantage of the compute series and you know use those NVIDIA chips. The H series has some of the fastest CPU we have and has InfiniBand networking support, which is also something that none of the other cloud providers have today. And so we're seeing for a lot of HPC-style workloads, that's really differentiated. The new L series has some of the largest SSDs in the industry, so it's ideal for big data. And then our new SAP instances, we just announced up to 19 terabytes of RAM. We're now seeing more and more organizations start to migrate their core financial SAP instances to the cloud and take advantage of those as well. And the cool thing is, there's more coming. And so these are just some of the new ones that we've announced in the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks. That we're particularly excited about. These include our new ND and NCV2 series of GPU acceleration. This includes the latest NVIDIA P40s, which are yet to actually ship, as well as the NVIDIA P100s. And these are going to be ideal for deep learning in particular on the P40 series, and something we hear lots of excitement around being able to take advantage of. We think we'll be the first cloud provider in market that has those. And they'll be coming very soon. And then our new DV3 and EV3 editions will be the first hyper-threaded VM options we have inside Azure. And those are also built inside Windows Server 2016. And so we'll take advantage of that nested virtualization support as well. So let me show off a couple more demos here when it comes to VMs. How many people here have heard of Azure Hybrid Use Rights. I think I got that wrong still. Ahub. Azure Hybrid Use Benefits. There we go. It's a wonderful name. It just rolls off the tongue. People are probably like, I have no idea what you're talking about right now. A few people raised their hand. How many people here have ever bought, their company has ever bought a Windows Server license? Lots more hands have gone up. How many people here knew that you can take those Windows Server licenses that you've already paid for and use it to drop your Azure bill by 50%? Ooh, a few other people shrugging, going, whoa, okay, tell me more. So one of the things that we do now, that's a feature we released about a month ago, but I haven't seen a ton of people, we're seeing a lot of people starting to use it, but still a lot of people, especially experienced Azure people, still seem a little surprised sometimes when I mention it, is this hybrid use benefit. And it's a really differentiated thing that no other cloud provider offers, and which you can use to save a lot of money. And basically the way it works is when you create a VM, you can do this with the command line through the API as well as the portal. You fill out the things like you normally do. And then at the very bottom here, you'll notice this thing called save money. Save up to 40%. It's actually like 48.9, so I rounded up to 50, with a license you already own. And so if you already own a Windows Server license that you've bought for on-premises and you have software assurance, which most people do with it, you basically are allowed to reuse that license now inside Azure. You can't use the license in both places simultaneously, but if you're moving a workload, say, into the cloud, you just click, yes, I already have it, and then just to confirm, tick the box to say you actually know what this means, and then you click OK. And once you do that, basically the cost of this VM goes down on average 40%, sometimes as much as 50%, and you save a ton of money. And so definitely something to take advantage of if you've got existing licenses, which you almost certainly do. We also then provide a way that you can actually see all of the VMs in Azure, whether or not they're using this particular license construct or not. So you can also go ahead and monitor it to make sure that you're not overusing the licenses. But it's a great benefit to take advantage of if you're not already, and a great way that you can go ahead and reduce costs. This works for creating all new VMs. You'll also see us in a couple weeks come out with a way that if you've already deployed a VM on Azure, you can go in and switch the license there as well, so you don't actually have to delete and redeploy your VM if you haven't taken advantage of it already. And so that'll be coming probably in the early July timeframe so that you can go back to any existing deployment you have on Azure and retroactively apply this license and take advantage of it. How many people here are going to look into this now? Great, a couple hands. Good, okay. It's a good way to save some money. I already showed off the M-Series, so let's go back to the slides here and talk about some more stuff. And the tips and tricks, we'll go into a lot more detail on a couple other cool features like VM scale sets, managed disks, and more. What I want to do, since this is a primarily developer crowd, is switch gears now and talk less about the infrastructure and more about some of those platform services that are built on top of the infrastructure, and showcase, you know, how can you build apps without having to focus as much on the infrastructure and instead really focus on your applications instead. And the first service I'm going to talk about in terms of how to do this, is the Azure App Service, which is one of our more popular services in Azure. It provides a really great way that you can build web apps, mobile apps, API apps, and more. And what's cool is you can do it in a variety of different languages. So it supports .NET, Java, Node, PHP, Python, Ruby, and Go. It now has both a Windows edition as well as a Linux edition. So previously, if you were running, say, Node or Python or PHP, it would run it on a IIS instance running the Windows OS. And so you can still use those languages, but one of the things we heard from developers was, hey, I want to use a native Linux library instead and have it work just like if I was running it inside a Linux VM. We now have, when you create an app service, you can choose to run either in a Windows host or a Linux host. And so that gives you 100% compatibility with all of the different libraries out there. The other option that we now have with Azure App Service is the ability to upload a Docker container as your host and actually deploy your apps using Docker. And we're seeing tremendous interest from Python and others where you can basically create your own Docker image with your own environment, upload it, and then you get basically whatever type of environment you want as part of it. And then App Service does auto-patching, auto-scale, and enables a bunch of continuous integration capabilities. So let's go ahead and show off how to do that. So let's make it fun. Since there's people here that are .NET, there's people here that are not .NET, let's actually switch to machine number 2. And maybe for our first App Service demo, why don't we actually do it on a Mac and do a non-.NET app? Just to kind of show off what we can do here. So what would you like to call this app? Fred, okay. Sounds good. So we're gonna create a server.js file in this Fred app here. And Oops. Just you have to watch me type. I'm going to stick a basic Hello World app here, and we're going to say, hello, Fred. And I'm using VS Code as part of this. Obviously, I could use any editor I wanted to. And then if I want to run this, I can just say Node.js, server.js there. We'll go in, localhost, hello, Fred. So we got basically simple Node.js app running locally on my machine. Let's go ahead now and deploy this in the cloud using Azure. So I'm going to go ahead and use the Azure App Service. And so I'm going to say new web mobile. We'll go ahead and create a web app. We're going to call it the Fred. Let's see if Fred's Fred is taken. Fred demo in UK is not taken. Good. And we'll go ahead here and just so I can clean up Fred later, put it in a resource group. And I'm just going to deploy it here in Europe, pin to the dashboard, hit create. And what this is going to go ahead and do is create a new Azure App Service web app. And so this is basically registering primarily the DNS name is what it's doing right now. So we'll have a URL that we can basically expose it. It's basically then finding an app service environment where it'll deploy this app. It'll wire up the load balancer, configure it with the DNS, and basically give me a fully ready environment in which to host our wonderful Fred app. I could deploy it a couple different ways. So I could use FTP. I could use web deploy. I could use a bunch of different mechanisms. I could also use source control, both in a continuous integration, continuous delivery way. And so we'll show that a little bit later. In this case here, I can pull it from GitHub. In this case here, I'm just going to set up a local Git repository that I can just do a local Git push directly from my machine. So that's wired up. And then I'm going to take this little Git URL here, which is my Git endpoint. We're going to go back to my Mac, cancel out that local. I'm going to initialize Git and add our file. Hello, Fred. And then what I'm going to go ahead and do is I'm going to register a remote called Azure. And then I can now say git push Azure master. And this is now going to push up the local code changes from my local Git repository into the cloud in Azure, deploy that app, and Fred is now running in the cloud in that URL. So Fred demo in uk.azurewebsites.net. There is Fred. It's now live. I want to, I could say, hello, Fred. Who are you? Or here's a change, or v2. Updated text, git push, Azure master. That change is now live as well in production. So pretty easy way that we can go ahead and git push this type of model. Again, this works with Python. It works particularly well with any interpreted language, and I can now manage it and take advantage of it here directly inside the portal if I want to, or through that CLI that we showed earlier. A couple things that are cool that are worth highlighting is if you go back to the deployment options, you can actually see the complete deployment history. And so if I want to go roll back to the original version of our Fred app, I could select this and go ahead and roll back. I could also, we'll talk about a little bit later on, deployment slots. Let's go ahead and just show off scaling. And so one of the things that I can also do is control how many instances Fred is running on. Right now it's running on effectively one VM. It's all a managed VM provided by the app service. But if I want to run it on two VMs, I could do that, hit save, and it would scale out. The other thing we now have built in to many of our services, including this one, is auto-scale support. And so rather than manually scale up or scale down, I could instead go ahead and create an auto-scale rule where I could effectively say, go ahead and increase or decrease the number of VMs based on a very sophisticated set of policies. And so I could say, if the CPU is on average greater than 70% for, say, 10 minutes, go ahead and increase the count by one and keep adding VMs up to a maximum threshold that I set. And then similarly, I could go ahead and turn off VMs and gently scale down the system, again, if the CPU had been below a certain threshold for a certain percent. And one of the things you might notice, if you've been had used Azure App Autoscale before, we have a lot more options now, whereas before it was a sort of simple autoscale model. This basically integrates into a kind of a core autoscale engine that we now have across Azure. It's the same sort of experience if you're scaling out a VM scale set or other types of resources. And this is also integrated as part of our monitoring and alerting system. So anytime one of these things kicks in, you can now go ahead and automatically track it through an SMS or through a webhook, and our full automation experience is part of that as well. So that was a little bit of how we could build an Azure App Service using Node. Let's switch back to machine number one and show it off in .NET. So what I have here is simple ASP.NET app. So we'll call this Fred in .NET. In this case here, I already have the app created. I'm just going to show off the publishing experience. This is just a vanilla ASP.NET MVC app. I can go ahead and publish it. I can create a new one, or in this case here, we'll go ahead and select an existing one. And Visual Studio here is going to pull my subscription details. I could then go ahead and select the app I want to deploy to. And one of the things I'll show a little bit later on is something called a deployment slot, which you can take advantage of as well. For right now, I'm just going to deploy it directly into the primary. And this is now going ahead, doing a local build. And then once it finishes building locally, it will go ahead and push it up into the cloud and deploy that Fred and .NET app somewhere here shortly. And I should see in about 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That was pretty good. it's a little game I play. Anyway. It's always cool when that works out. It's always awkward when it doesn't. So anyway, so a couple other things I mentioned. So we got our Fred in .NET now deployed here through Visual Studio. A couple cool features about App Service that a lot of people that have seen App Service before might not know about. How many people here know about deployment slots? Okay, a lot of people do, not everyone. But let's actually talk a little bit about what a deployment slot is, and for people who haven't seen it, show off how you can use it. And so the cool thing about a deployment slot is it basically provides a way that you can deploy multiple instances of your app and effectively test out your app in production before your users actually see it. And so you can create any deployment slot you want. So I could say my UK slot, or give it any name you want. And this is going to basically expose a new URL to the application that isn't public, so it's not your primary URL that the world can see. So this case is now deployed, but you can see here, this is my scottgoo.europe.net-myuk slot. I have a staging and a testing one already created as well. And what this now allows me to do, if I go back here to my app, is if I wanted to Fred in UK version 2, make a code change, rather than deploy this into production so that everyone can see it, where I might have a bug and I'll discover in production that I have a bug, what I can do is I can create what's called a new publishing profile. And you can have multiple of these in that drop-down list. And in this case here, what I'm going to do is deploy into my staging slot first. So I'm just going to deploy into a staging slot. I'm going to hit publish. And so it's going to go through the same publish mechanism that I showed earlier. But in this case here, it won't be live to the world immediately because I've deployed it into the environment. So it's running in the same set of VMs that it'll be running in production on. But one of the things you'll notice is the URL is that staging URL that we set up. So it's private just to me. You could put a GUID in there. You could basically lock down a rule so that only people in your organization can see it. Or you could just have it be kind of a well-known URL that no one else can see. But I can now test out the Fred in .NET version 2 edition. My mouse stopped working. It refreshed. You can see the primary site is still V1. So I can make sure everything's working. And then when I'm ready, I just go in here and hit swap. And I can basically say swap the production with the staging version. Click OK. And what this is now doing is effectively changing the URLs so that that staging version will now become the main URL that everyone hitting the site will see. And then the cool thing is we take the previous version and move it into the staging slot. And that way, if I make a mistake and realize, oh, shoot, I made a bug or I have a code change, I can easily switch it back very quickly as part of it. And in just a few more seconds, this will hopefully be done, at which point all new users will see the new version of the code. And again, people that, yep, they're finished. So now if we come back here and hit refresh, you'll notice Scott Goo in Europe, which is the main website, now has version 2. And when I come back here and go back to the staging slot, hit refresh, it's got back, went back to version 1. So an easy way you can do versioning on your web app changes or any type of app change and be able to kind of atomically update the version in a very smooth way. And again, have a very safe way that you can immediately roll back if you have problems. More advanced features you can now do with deployment slots as well is transfer traffic. So you can actually say, like, only run 2% of my users to the new version for some period of time. So you can also test out with real load, are things working well? And then flip 100% of users later. And so we kind of enable that type of A-B testing as well as part of that overall experience and try to make it really easy, again, to build super powerful apps. So how many people here are doing continuous integration, continuous delivery in Azure today? Okay, a lot of people are. We got a lot of experts here. I'm impressed. So one of the things we have support for with App Service, and we have it now with containers and Service Fabric, which I'll show a little bit later, is the ability to use things like VSTS to enable a continuous integration, continuous delivery model, where you can effectively check in code, do a build, do a test, do a deploy, and be able to get analytics throughout that experience in an easy way. And we now have pretty good support, I think, inside both Azure and Visual Studio that makes it easy to set one of these things up. And whereas before, you'd have to do a lot of configuration, learn a lot of different concepts, we've tried to really build into the product a lot of support that hopefully makes it pretty easy to do this. So let's go ahead and set that up. So I'm gonna create a new app. We'll wire it up CI/CD. Ooh, I just realized. Do it with a different account. So you get a watch. Let me log in with my Hotmail account. All right, here I want to show off the cool, powerful feature we have called multi-factor authentication, which if you haven't set up for your account, and also type in your right password correctly. Do install the Authenticator app on your phone. This basically is a great way, even if your password is stolen, people can't log in and do bad things to your Azure subscription. And what I'm going to do here now is just create a new app service. we'll call it Fred. UK CI/CD. Create it. And what I'm going to do here is set up an app that will load here also inside Visual Studio and wire up a CI/CD pipeline so that every time I make a code change and check in code, it basically will update and kick off a full CI/CD pipeline with Azure and VSTS and deploy it. So I now have Fred in the UK with CI/CD. As the name of it, it's a blank app. You'll notice here we now have this continuous delivery option wired up directly inside the Azure portal. And using that, I can very easily walk through the steps needed to set up a CI/CD pipeline with a variety of different mechanisms. And so I can choose what code repository I want to do CI/CD with. We support both VSTS, Azure Code Repository, as well as GitHub. And so you can actually have your code in GitHub, but use VSTS as your build server, as well as your test automation framework, and then be able to push it, or you can run everything inside VSTS. You could also point to an external Git resource as part of this as well. In this case here, I'm going to point to a project I have inside VSTS already called CI/CD, which we'll look at in just a second. I can choose what framework I want to do. So it looked at this and said, it looks like a .NET project. Is it .NET or .NET Core? You can actually choose that. You can wire up whether or not you want us to do load testing. So we'll actually run real load traffic against the site before we actually push it. You can also control whether to deploy it in a staging slot or whether to actually just drive it directly to master. So you can use that staging slot feature, and then you click OK. And what this is now doing is wiring up a full CI/CD pipeline against my Visual Studio Team Services account. This is what this this VS repository looks like. And then if I click in the builds here, you'll notice that I now have a new build pipeline that's been created automatically. We've created the steps for you, so it's called Fred in UK CI/CD, just to prove it's real. And this is going to basically automatically, every time someone checks in, pull the source, do a new Git refresh, build the solution, run any tests as part of it, and then basically publish it to Azure. And what's nice is you can create and modify this build pipeline however you want, so you can add your own tasks or your own scripts. And since we just tried it out for the first time, what you should see here is there's actually already a build in progress that's queued up. And this is going to basically kick off, or is kicking off now, a build running inside VSTS from the code that was already there. It'll run the tests, and then we'll automatically push it into that app service environment and deploy it inside Azure. And the beauty is we literally set up everything needed from a CI/CD perspective to go against an existing repository. And anytime I go back into VS now and make a change, so I could say CI/CD demo with Fred, go ahead and commit a change, say updated to say Fred, push that. This is basically checking in another change into VSTS, and oops, I'm going to go back here now, go back to my builds. You'll see it just kicked off yet another build because it noticed yet another change, and so this is now going back into the build environment. It'll request another build server automatically. Position one in the queue, so someone else is building for a moment, and then probably the next 10 or 15 seconds, it'll start building this new code change that we just made. There you go. And I'm going to repeat the process, and then when it's completed, if the test passed, push it again into production, and I now have a full CI/CD workflow set up. So a pretty easy way to set this up. And then the cool thing is the power of ESDS is I can go in, add build tasks, and customize this in a really deep way and make it a lot richer. Ooh, and I failed the build. Looks like I forgot to check in the test with the text change. So good news is the CI/CD caught it, and we'll go back later and update the test to check for Fred instead of Amsterdam. But anyway, simple way to do CI/CD. Talk about mobile, and then we'll take a break. How many people here are building native mobile apps today as part of their company? A number of people are. So let's go ahead and walk through some of the cool things that we're doing to make building native mobile apps a lot easier. Just setting context in terms of what's essential when you want to build a great mobile experience. You want to be able to build a great native mobile app on the device. You want to be able to build, test, distribute, and learn, set up a full CI/CD workflow. And then obviously you're going to want to have a cloud on the back end that you can use with that mobile app to retrieve data and add a whole bunch of functionality. One of the things we now have built into VS 2017 is great native mobile tooling support as part of the Xamarin technology that we acquired last year. And this is now included with every Visual Studio copy, and so you can build iOS, Android, and Windows apps in a really easy way with it. And then every Visual Studio subscription now also includes Visual Studio for Mac, which we just went GA with 2 weeks ago. And so this gives you a way you can run Visual Studio on your Mac. You can open up those same iOS, Android, mobile projects, and we're also adding .NET Core and ASP.NET Core support to it as well. So that's now included, as well as now tooling for Azure. And so you can also build your full app, right-click, publish, just like I showed earlier with a web app. You can now do that as well for both web apps and mobile apps inside VS for Mac as well. And then the other service that a lot of people aren't as familiar with yet, it's in preview now, and I'll do some demos, is our Visual Studio Mobile Center, which now enables you to do, build, test, and distribute, as well as analytics, as a service. And it works not just with the Xamarin technology that's built into VS, but you can also use React Native, you could use native Xcode and Objective-C, you could use Android, Swift, and Java, and be able to take advantage of that as well throughout the service. And with that, let's show some demos. So what I have here is a Xamarin-based app running inside Visual Studio. So I'm using, in this case here, Xamarin Forms with XAML-based markup. I've got, obviously, code here and my code behind file. I've set a breakpoint. And what I want to do is test this out on a phone. So to do that, I'm going to do a couple things. And so one of the cool things that we now support is the ability to do this without having to have a Mac. And so you can actually now do full iOS and Android development with just Windows and a phone. And so, cool. So what I'm going to do here to try to show this off is I'm going to pair my phone with my PC in terms of screen sharing. This is, don't copy that code. And now you can see on my PC using AirPlay, so this is just using the built-in AirPlay protocol, I can basically see my phone, which I probably wouldn't do for development, but it's super useful when you're actually trying to demo it. And that way you can see both the editor and the phone at the same time. And then let's move this here so you can see both at the same time. Oh, come on. This is the hardest part of the demo, doing this with one hand. And I do have somewhere here, someone kindly, I can't find it now, gave me a little prompt that I could stick my phone down so I don't have to hold it up like this. But I lost it. Never mind, so I'm gonna hold it like this. And let's go ahead and demo how I could debug this. So what you can do now with the Xamarin tooling is I can go ahead, Tools, Xamarin Live Player, I can click, oh, there, thank you. This is where I have to pick it up anyway. I'm gonna go ahead and say Manage Devices. And one of the things we built in that you can install on your phone is this thing called the Xamarin Live Player. So you click this and run it locally on your phone. You're gonna say pair it to Visual Studio. You then scan that QR code. Click OK, and Once I do that, what I will hopefully be able to do when I hit play is just ran that app on my phone. So this basically just pushed the code from Visual Studio into the iPhone. I'm now actually running that app. No Mac involved. Basically, we have built-in compilation and debugging support now in an iOS app that I'm able to convert. And in case you're wondering, like, that can't be real, let's click on an item. And notice we just broke in the debugger inside Visual Studio. And so if we hover over here, you can see full debugging experience. I'm doing this all in one hand of literally what we just clicked on in the phone. Hit continue, the app continues to work. So super easy way, you can develop, you can push your changes just using the LiveWriter app. Super fast iterative experience, much faster than pretty much anything you've probably seen before. Other cool thing that we have built in is sometimes you just want to actually work on the UI for one particular form. And so the other cool thing you can do is you can go ahead and with a live player say, just run the current view. And so this is now just loading the current XAML form I have here on the right-hand side. And what's cool is it works interactively. So let's drag some more XAML text. Notice the right-hand side. Boom, it just changed. I didn't have to actually recompile or redeploy. And so I can make this change. And if I like blue better than red, change that, cursor away, it's now blue. And again, on a live device. So really easy way you can do very fast iterative development for iOS, Android, and Windows, all using Visual Studio. In this case here on Windows, I could also do it the same thing with VS for Mac. And I can share the code projects between both of those experiences in a really rich way. The cool thing is all this is built in. So if you're a Visual Studio user today, you can actually do everything I'm showing here right now. The live viewer is actually in preview, but it's a public preview. And you can download and do everything that you want right now. So that's a little bit in terms of the IDE. I mentioned then also this Visual Studio Mobile Center. And so let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll take a quick break. At 11 o'clock, we are also going to pause for remembrance of the Manchester at the moment of silence. So we'll also make sure we get done by then. But we'll use the last 6.5 minutes to kind of show off Visual Studio Mobile Center before we do it. So this is our Visual Studio Mobile Center. And if you remember when I talked about native mobile development, you want to be able to do native mobile apps that are beautiful, like the one I just showed using the VS tooling. But then you also want to be able to do CI/CD. You want to be able to do distribution to beta users. You want to be able to do crash analytics. You want to be able to see user analytics. And you want to be able to do this in a continuous fashion so that as you build a mobile app, you can make it better and better. And that's where Visual Studio Mobile Center comes into play. And with Visual Studio Mobile Center, you can basically manage multiple different types of projects. And so I have one here called Bike Rider for iOS. I can drill in here. And what's nice is it basically guides me through sort of an end-to-end DevOps experience for doing mobile. So I can click on Build. And basically shows me all my branches for this particular project. So in this case here, it's Git managed. You'll notice here I could open up this project in VSTS. So in this case, this project is backed by VSTS, but this is sort of a mobile optimized view that we've created on top of it. I could also open and manage projects through GitHub. So if I have a GitHub project, and I'm coming from more of a native mobile development background, I can just basically log in, point to my GitHub project, and I get the same Visual Studio Mobile Center experience against that as well, where it takes care of lots of stuff for me. If I want to, I can drill in to basically see my build history on this branch. I could even go ahead and configure it. So again, I can choose what version of Xcode am I going to compile this with when I finally deploy it on the iPhone. I can upload my mobile certificates for the App Store. I can go ahead and configure this to run on a real device so that after a build completes, it'll actually power up the app on a real phone running in our cloud to actually validate that it boots fine and that it hits a certain memory threshold. We'll show that a little bit later. And then I can also automate doing automatic distribution of the finished build to, say, my alpha testers or my QA environment users through Hockey app and basically have them pick up the bits themselves as well. I mentioned the test capability. Let's go ahead and click on the test tab now. And so it's really easy to basically streamline the build and the testing of your mobile apps using Visual Studio Mobile Center. And so you can create test cases that you can upload that are full UI automation test cases. So I could try out different steps here. And what's cool is instead of just sort of simulating an environment, you can take advantage of thousands of phones that we actually have in our cloud. And so these are real devices. These aren't emulators. And these are actually what it looks like when you run all these test scripts against all those devices. So these are 28 different iPhones. So you can go back versions. You can check different iOS-specific capabilities. And you can basically see, for example, there's a couple here that have a bug. I can drill in and actually see a video history of the playing experience. I can also look at memory and CPU utilization to actually see exactly what happened on that real device. And the beauty is that way I'm not having to manually test it out on mine and my 10 best friends' phones. Instead, I can do it in a completely automated way. And this is particularly useful for things like Android, where there are literally 1,000 different Android devices of different manufacturers, different sizes, et cetera. All those are in the cloud as well. And so you simply build your project. Again, works with Xamarin, works with native Objective-C and Swift. It works with Java on Android, works with React Native from a web perspective. All this just works with it, and I can now do this full testing. And then last but not least, I can go ahead and distribute this app to whoever I want to. And so I could define, for example, my alpha testers, add users into this group, and then I can either manually push out a new build or just wire it up in my CI/CD pipeline. And then if they are using Hockey app on their phone, which is now part of Microsoft, next time they run the app, it'll say there's a new version, do you want it? They click a button, they now have the latest build. They can send feedback on it. And in the crash and analytics section of the site, we'll actually send and upload crash dumps that you can debug across any version that you've released, as well as user analytics to see who's using what inside the app and be able to optimize it accordingly. So kind of a full end-to-end DevOps experience for doing mobile. This plus all the Xamarin technology I showed inside both Visual Studio for Windows, and then I didn't show it, but I described it for Visual Studio for Mac, is now available if you're a Visual Studio customer or using MSDN, and a fantastic way that you can go ahead and now do rich native mobile app development and target literally any platform. We got lots of great companies here in the UK and elsewhere that are taking advantage of Xamarin today. And so this is just a subset of some of the big brands and companies that are using it. You know, some of the well-known consumer names would be like Pinterest. Slack is using the test cloud and a lot of the back-end infrastructure for doing the testing of their DevOps experience and a lot more. So both big brands as well as enterprise brands are taking advantage of it and using this to build some amazing native mobile app experiences. So we have 1 minute until the moment of silence for Manchester. And so any questions I can answer in 51 seconds, since I think diving into data is probably not something we're going to be able to cover in that time. Anything that you've seen so far that you have questions about that I can go into quickly? The mobile center, the Visual Studio Mobile Center is in public preview today, so you can go and sign up now. You can, in fact, sign up both with your a Microsoft account. You can sign up with your organization account if you're using Azure Active Directory. You can also just sign up with your GitHub account, so you don't even have to create a new account. You can literally just single sign in with GitHub, and then you can also just create a new username password if you'd like. That's all available in preview. So I think now we're going to have a follow-up minute silence in remembrance of those who lost their lives in the tragic events in Manchester on Monday. And so we're going to go ahead now and spend 60 seconds in silence. I think that marks the end of the silence. Thank you. And best wishes to everyone. So I think on that point in this presentation, I think we're scheduled to take a 20-minute break, and then we'll come back for part two, We're going to start off with data in part two, then we're going to move to containers and microservices. We're going to show off a bunch of serverless functions and serverless computing, cognitive services, and a bunch more. So see you again in 20 minutes, and thank you.